Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington and future capital of the State of Liberty, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican right here in Spokane Valley, Washington, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality, and it doesn't just stop with the election. You got to make freedom a reality every day, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. We can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. As Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. Now, this rebirth of freedom that we're looking at right now in Washington State and across the country, there's something very critical that we need to talk about and that I've noticed recently. And unfortunately, it's particularly with the younger generation because they haven't been taught, I don't think, in some respects, what to do when approached with fundamental principles. I've been having these weird discussions on social media over the last couple of days with people that just refuse to read the primary source document. If you're a Christian, you should read the Bible cover to cover. Period. There is no non-Bible believing Christian. That doesn't make sense. You have to read the Bible cover to cover. Similarly, you got to read the Constitution cover to cover, the Declaration of Independence cover to cover. And what I'm noticing with a lot of the younger generation is that when you say, what primary source documents have you read? None. Okay, well then, here's the primary source document that's the fundamental principle. And then they say, well, I just want to listen to that. And I'm seeing people online do this. You know, somebody was talking about something being unconstitutional. I put up the very specific, detailed passage from the Constitution showing them that they were incorrect. And it was like it didn't exist. It was all feelings and emotion. And when I was growing up, a couple times, my father, who is a wonderful man, made me go look. It was so annoying. I would ask a question, he'd go look it up. Hey, well, where is this country? Go look it up. Well, what did the founding fight? Go look it up. And it was annoying at the time, but what he was doing was teaching me, if I didn't know the answer, instead of asking a question from somebody else, was to teach myself to learn how to think, not what to think, but how to think, how to go research, how to teach myself what was really the fundamental principle by reading the primary source document. And the second thing I'm noticing today is we have a lot of people without any true life experience. And I believe that every young man, young woman should go to a third world country or a place outside of Western Europe to see how the rest of the world actually lives and appreciate what we have here in the United States of America. And what I'm seeing is people that don't have any life experience trying to pass themselves off as some kind of an expert on something, or think that they can just step into a job and all of a sudden be in charge of the entire job, even though they have not worked in the past at the lower levels to learn work ethic, to learn the ins and outs of what it means, not just to work hard, but to follow other people and not just challenge everybody. You have this emotional reaction to. You know, you have this emotional, well, it just doesn't feel good. And I'm seeing this more and more. And so everybody listening to Patriot Radio today, if you got a young person in your life, and most of you I know probably do, let's mentor our young people to go look it up. And I'm not talking on Google necessarily. I'm saying go look it up and read the primary source document for yourself. Don't go to a book that tells you what the primary source document says. Go read the thing for yourself. Learn it. memorize it so you don't have to go back onto the internet. I think that's also the internet's made us lazy. I mean, we sit there, you could type up, you know, the ask the answer for any question. It's made us a little lazy. I mean, when we do learn it, we got to memorize some of this stuff. Some of these fundamental principles, they need to be memorized. And so anyway, I just want to highlight that this is happening more and more, and what it is leading to is illogical, unreasonable, and very candidly, untruthful positions. And I've seen Christians fall into this too, and I'm going to get to this a little bit later in the show. But specifically, I want to highlight something. I was talking to a pastor friend of mine today, just a man I just hold in such high esteem. And he was talking about that apparently Oxford came out with like their word of the year, and the word of the year was post-truth. You know, meaning that your feelings and emotions are now what's true. There is no such thing as objective truth. Now, what that is and what it used to be called is literally insanity, where you would not believe the actual real world that is out there. And so we just have to get back to this, and we have to be mentoring the next generation on what they need to do to learn how to think. Not what to think, how to think. Research, primary source documents. You know, it is important what happened in Rome. Sir John Glubb's book, Fate of Empires, that I talked about on the last show, it is important to know what the consistent patterns of history are. Now, history doesn't repeat itself, it often rhymes, though, as one person put it. And if we get that, then a lot of this emotional stuff kind of naturally goes away because you're focusing on the truth. And there was a great video series put out a while back, and one of the key components of that is, what is truth? And Jesus Christ himself came into the world, and a lot of people will answer, and this is how they start off the series actually, that he came into the world to die for our sins, he came into the world to grant us salvation and eternal life. But Jesus Christ himself, when asked by Pontius Pilate, said, I came into the world to testify to the truth. And it's important, I think, to understand the era of history that we are in. We are in the age of decadence in the United States of America. Some might say we are in the final part of the fourth turning. Some might say we are on the cusp of a rebirth of freedom, circling back around to where I began. And if we recognize that, then we also recognize that it is a return to fundamental principles that we need exactly right now in this time. Now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front, China saying that the rookie Donald Trump needs to fall in line. Now, if we said that to the Chinese premier, okay, we said China needs to fall in line, I'm sure that would be an international incident. There'd be this huge outcry. The left would come unglued on social media. There would be, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth in the streets. There would be this outcry. How dare somebody put the United States in such a terrible position, right? And yet China says it's us. Now, that really, I think, shows you who the future enemies are of the United States. I would say current, because there have been a lot of very brash and very startling remarks from Chinese generals about what their plans are to take over most of the Pacific in their area. And remember, this is a communist dictatorship. This is a communist country that persecutes Christians. So when I hear Christians defending China, I'm a little confused because communism has proven to be the worst ideology, the scourge of the earth. So we need to keep that stuff in mind. On a little bit brighter note, the Italians, in their no vote on their referendum regarding the European Union, voting no, rebuked the globalists again. Renzi resigns. And this continued rebirth of freedom across the world is happening. And they're looking to us here in the United States to lead the way. And I think there's one way we can do that. And that is we can lead at the local level and the state level by defending freedom. Donald Trump can't do this all by himself. It has to be at the lowest levels as well. Also on the international front, so the United Nations is trying to change the Temple Mount to Muslim, and I've reported on this here for a few weeks. But here's this interesting part, too, that as I've detailed on this show over the last few years, there has been a push to basically rebuild the temple, but not actually on the same site, just actually have everything ready to build it on the same site, all the accoutrements, all the clothing, everything, and have it ready. So if the word is given to rebuild the temple, they can do it very quickly. Well, part of that was the reconstitution of the Sanhedrin, which had been dormant for hundreds of years, and now the appointment of a Jewish high priest. Very stunning how things are moving forward for those of you that pay attention to prophecy. Also on the international front, along these lines, very interesting, there was a cloud, literally a, you have to see it online. It was a storm that was, it was basically vertical. Okay, like there was like a line, and it stayed exactly on the Israeli border with Syria in the Golan. Between Israel and ISIS, incidentally, by the way. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is a sign from God. You got to check it out online yourselves. This cloud on the border of Israel, and it's been confirmed by several media outlets. Just it's amazing looking at it. It does not cross the border fence. It just stays there as this vertical storm of rain and sand. And I mean, when I say storm, I mean, this is a dark cloud. You got to check it out. Very interesting. Also on the international front, the United States and the United Kingdom, according to some archived documents found in the files brought out by Edward Snowden, were spying on airline passengers. Now, I suppose that's not, you know, necessarily, you know, some great revelation. I mean, I think many people thought that was going on anyway, but this was on international flights, and they had a couple of programs that they were codenamed to allow this collection of data, which almost happened in real time. Okay, and I want to read these codenames. Codename Thieving Magpie and codename Homing Pigeon, based on these internal documents. And so your cell phone apparently was not safe on these airlines as far as your privacy was concerned. But just another indication of where everything is headed, of this collection of data on everyone all the time for really no legitimate reason. Now people say, well, wait a minute, there's a legitimate reason of terrorism. Well, the Fourth Amendment says that you have to have a specific listing of the places and things to be searched, and you have to have probable cause. So you can't do what was called at that time general warrants, where you could search anywhere, anytime, for any reason. That wasn't legitimate, and it isn't legitimate under our Constitution. So very interesting that this happened. Now, you throw in the fact this was on international flights. It's probably how they were trying to get away with this between, you know, the airspaces of various countries. But, I mean, is that really in the spirit of the Constitution? No. But a very interesting article. If you get a chance, take a look at that. I believe that one's on Yahoo, so take a look at it and share it with your friends and family so they can know as well that this kind of stuff is real. It's been happening for a while. On the national front, so I'm going to keep touting this. Trump going to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Now, many people have said, well, it's already a terrorist organization. Technically, it is not. Actually, Hamas is, which isn't a militant arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. But the actual Muslim Brotherhood itself has not been declared. And that's where I think they're going with this. But then you have the Holy Land Foundation trial and all of these unindicted co-conspirators listed in very close detail organizations here in the United States that are members of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, according to the Holy Land Foundation trial, and what is now known as the explanatory memorandum that was found in the archives of the Muslim Brotherhood of the United States. So what that means, declaring the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, means all of the affiliated organizations, ones that say they are members of the Muslim Brotherhood in this explanatory memorandum, would also be implicated. And that's why I think it's so important. Also on the national front, and probably one of my favorite headlines of the last few weeks, GOP readies cuts to federal workforce. It's about time. You know, the mid and upper level management in a lot of these bureaucracies is just crazy. 5-7 levels of redundancy. Unbelievable. I remember we did this this inquiry into DSHS here in Washington State, and in the levels of mid and upper level management were just crazy. And if you just cut that out, it doesn't affect services at all. If you just cut that out, you save millions and millions and millions of dollars. I imagine at the federal level, we're talking billions of dollars. So very good trend that we're seeing right now on the national front. Also on the national front, more appointments by Donald Trump to head the EPA, Scott Pruitt. And Scott Pruitt is in opposition to global warming. So I find, and by the way, I believe global warming has been conclusively disproven. He's currently the Attorney General of Oklahoma. And let's see what he does with the EPA. I hope that a lot of these rules and agreements with many of the states are completely stricken, because that can be done very quickly. And I hope that he moves very quickly to dismantle this alarmist culture that has nothing to do with the environment, but has more to do with controlling people. Also, an interesting pick by Donald Trump in regards to Secretary of Labor, somebody who has been an outspoken opponent of minimum wage increases, Andrew Puzder. And interesting, too, with him, you know, bringing up the idea that these minimum wage increases actually take jobs away from the younger generation, the millennial generation. And there was one lady here in Washington State after they raised the minimum wage to $15. And by the way, I mean, I make the argument, if 15 is good, then why not 50? If this is such a great idea to raise the minimum wage, why not 50? Well, because obviously the truth of the matter is, if you did that, it would bankrupt the economy. And it would bankrupt most businesses across the state of Washington. So this one lady voted for minimum wage increase and then realized that her daycare costs were going to go up by $300 a month and was like, I can't afford this. If I would have known this, I wouldn't have voted for it. And this is the kind of thing I'm talking about, you know, when we talk about teaching yourself how to think, learning how to think, and researching things. Just simple math should have been enough. But apparently not. So very good to see that having a head of labor here in the Trump administration that understands this fallacy of minimum wage increases can fight back against it. Also on the national front, and this is This is hilarious, okay? Brian Williams, all right? This is the guy, remember, who lied about being in danger while he was a reporter and made up all these stories. There was a lot of memes that came out, you know, with Brian Williams and in combat and Normandy and stuff. And very, very funny. But this is not funny. Or maybe it is a little. Brian Williams comes out against and decries with great passion the fake news that is out there, the so-called fake news. Brian Williams comes out and has this monologue against fake news. Isn't that rich? I mean, let me put it this way. If you thought that mainstream media still had credibility, this should completely take that away 100% totally. Unbelievable. Brian Williams decrying fake media, fake news. Good night. Where are we coming to? You know, in Russia, under the Soviet regime, they had Pravda. That was the name of their news. And, you know, Pravda in Russian means truth. And everybody knew it was the exact opposite of it. I mean, that's really what we're seeing today. You know, what they're calling fake news is probably more accurate news than what these guys are putting out. On the regional front, still no word on the situation with Kathy McMorris Rodgers. She's up for the appointment for Secretary of the Interior. 50-50 between her and the governor of Oklahoma is what I'm hearing from my sources back east. So we'll keep our eyes on that situation. Also on the regional front, the Freedom Agenda, we're going to be doing a live video broadcast during session. And I would invite you to share that live video broadcast when we do it. We're going to be talking about the issues of the day, what's come up, kind of give you from the ground exactly what's happening, be very transparent about what's happening in government and how you can get involved and what you can do about it. I think that a lot of times there has been a push to shut down information coming from the Capitol. Now, it's done in a couple of ways, I believe, under the guise of ethics. You know, the ethics committee says you can't post certain videos created, in the legislature on your own social media networks because that could be campaigning. Well, what it ends up doing is actually silencing legislators. And there's one legislator, very courageous legislator right now, undergoing ethics complaints for putting out YouTube videos. And I got to tell you something, information is ethical and getting it out is ethical, especially if it's to your constituents on what the heck is happening in Olympia. I mean, that's our job as representatives. So this Freedom Agenda live video broadcast, we're going to make sure that we get it out to you about what exactly is happening on the ground and then get your feedback as well. Some of this stuff, you know, when you see what's happening, it's just kind of unbelievable. But I mean, that's what we're there for, is to bring you the news, bring you the information, because ultimately we, the people, are the boss of this country. And that's what we need, is information to make good decisions. Also on the regional front, last week in Olympia, we were briefed on a couple of very interesting issues. The first is automated cars. Now, a lot of people think this might be in the conceptual phase. It is not, folks. They are testing automated cars right now. Now, there have been several accidents with some of these things, and they're trying to improve the technology. But the fact of the matter is, automated cars are going to be on the road within 5 years. You need to prepare yourself for that. And some people are trying to shoot for within 2 years. Now, here is an interesting take on this. And this is what was part of the discussion. So you get in your car, you hit drive to your destination, and you sit back and you go to sleep. But what if there is a hazard in the road that if had you been awake, you could have avoided? Is that your fault then? Or is that the fault of the car if the car doesn't avoid the hazard? Those are some of the interesting things. Then it got a little weirder. They gave us a briefing on drones and specific pickup and delivery drones that are going to be used. And again, within 5 years, folks, this is not conceptual. This is in the testing phases. And they actually are testing an automated air traffic control system for drones. And you are going to have packages delivered by drone. You are going to be able to pick up packages by drone. So think about your prescription. prescription gets delivered directly to your house via drone, or you send your drone to go pick up your prescription. Interesting as well, along that line, is what about flying cars? So now you've got a combination of technologies. And there have been flying cars, for those of you that don't know, since 1970s. You can look it up online, called the Mueller flying car. But it really brings out the fact that this technological revolution is happening so fast. I don't think we're able to process what it actually means and could entail for us in the future, where literally we don't go to the grocery store anymore. We shop online and it delivers it right to our door. Now, I always think there will be some kind of store, because you want to go touch and feel certain things, especially like clothes or something like that. But this is literally what we were briefed on last week in Olympia. And folks, it is coming that fast. And I'm going to keep you abreast of what is happening. But the laws are being written right now and debated right now on how to make this happen. Also on the regional front, the 51st state movement. Now, I want to go through a couple things. I got chastised by a couple people that this was unchristian. And I would remind some folks that the idea of splitting a state, that there are two completely different value systems on two parts of the state. Now, it doesn't mean there's areas of Western Washington that aren't believing these value systems, but it's saying basically that the East and the West are different. It's a fact. We can see it in the vote totals. We can see it in the vote totals on initiatives in regards to different issues, such as marriage. We can see that there is really two states right now, even though everybody tries to say one Washington. Now, I got some Christians got really upset at me about this. And I responded. I tried to respond respectfully, but they say, you know, be godly, that it's ungodly to offer a split state. I would not only wholeheartedly disagree, I want to give you the specific scripture reference in Deuteronomy 28:15 through 68. We are in a time that is an Israel-Judah moment. Okay? Where you have part of the state of Washington that wants to pursue God in his righteous ways, and part of the state that does not. And in such situations, an Israel-Judah moment really is, I think, the template for what's happening. This is a peaceful split of the state. Nobody's leaving the union. But decentralization of power when part becomes corrupt is very important, and it's an important fundamental principle. So before people start reacting with emotion, there is a very clear Christian basis, and it's not like there hasn't been time after time after time after time where a particular part of the state hasn't been given the opportunity to do the right thing. Now remember, Washington State voted in abortion before Roe versus Wade. Washington State was one of the first states to vote in same-sex marriage. Washington State has voted consistently against your right to bear arms, my right to bear arms, our right to bear arms. And the problem that I see is that direction only leads to one very bad place. And that's fine if they want to take that direction, but I don't have to be a part of that. And some people on the west side of the state feel like they're led to be there. Great, you're led to be there. Awesome. You also have the opportunity to move to the east side of the state if we're able to split. And I find it interesting, too, that there are some people out there who said this was unconstitutional. And so I specifically cited Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution that gives the process by which a state can split. So that's a ridiculous, conclusively disproven argument, and I heard three or four people out there, and then they refused to admit they were wrong when I showed them the primary source doc. Then there are some people who say, well, this isn't serious. It's going to take a lot of momentum. Look at folks. If we decide to split the state, very likely Congress and the Senate will vote for it. So the question is whether we want to vote for it, whether our legislators will vote for it here in Washington. And I hear these derisive things coming out of the left about freeloading east side of the state, the freeloading folks in eastern Washington, these welfare freeloaders. Okay, fine. Forgive us for being such a great burden to you on the west side of the state and let us go. If that's the case, let us go. And, you know, logically, they have to support that. And I bring this up all the time. I mean, they're actually Daily Coast, The Stranger, all advocate for splitting the state because us welfare freeloaders on the east side of the state are weighing them down. We're so sorry. Let us go then. What is the problem about letting us go? And they can't answer that question. The other part of this is taxes. Eastern Washington consistently votes against tax increases. Now, there are people that say there would be tax increases if we split apart, that Eastern Washington would have to raise taxes. And folks, I'm telling you right now, that is not accurate. First of all, we would not have the same, that presumes we would have the same size of government in Eastern Washington. If we split into this new state of liberty, that liberty would have the same size of government, folks, that is not true. We would not have the same size of government. We would not have the same requirements of payments out to all these social programs and things that a lot of us in Eastern Washington disagree with. It's not accurate. Secondly, if we reduce the regulations in Eastern Washington, we're going to have businesses swarming here, and we're going to have more than enough revenue. We aren't going to need to raise taxes because we're going to grow the economy. So it is a fallacy to say we would have to raise taxes if we split apart. Total fallacy. So if you want to get involved in the 51st State Movement, go to State of Liberty on Facebook and just join the 51st State Movement. It's a group. Join it. We've literally had hundreds. We're getting 100 members plus a day now. And KXOY tried to kind of like poo-poo this idea. They put a poll up online and they had to stop the poll. Now, it might have been because they were already, you know, at a time limit, but it looked like a lot to a lot of people. They stopped the poll because 73% of the people, I think it was like almost like 8,000 that weighed in on this poll, 73% are in favor of splitting the state. So this idea that's not popular, ridiculous, conclusively debunked right there. On the local front, once again, we're moving forward. I'm trying to get the North-South Freeway restarted, and I'll keep you updated on that. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. Please go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page. And if you get a chance, go to this State of Liberty Facebook page, join the 51st State Movement group, and join up. Help us out. And if you got any questions or anything, you can send them to me at matt@voteshea.com. Well, it's my pleasure to bring up one of the issues that has a lot of us on the east side of the state up in arms, and that is having the downtown Seattle radicals try and dictate how we're going to manage our ranches and farms in eastern Washington, particularly on the matter of wolves. And with me today, I have Scott Rockholm, who is an activist, a wolf expert. Scott, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Thanks for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
So, hey, if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you came to be involved in this whole wolf issue.
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to make a brief statement about it. I'm an avid hunter, outdoorsman. I've worked in ranching with friends and family for most of my life. And like most people, I ignored the impacts of what wolves were already doing prior to my involvement for several years. I would read about it and turn a blind eye. And it wasn't until the wolves actually affected me one year while I was hunting. And within one year of successful hunting to the next year, there was absolutely nothing at all to be hunted. After taking 2 weeks off of work, investing all the money to go, and spending all the time and effort to hunt, there was nothing left. And it still did not occur to me. So I spent some time out with several months after that, and I finally came across an actual wolf kill scene where the wolves had ripped apart a female moose, a cow moose, and basically didn't eat her. I was puzzled by this. And then I found another one. Throughout the week, I found several of them, and two of them were alive still. Wow. So I contacted Fish and Game, and they basically shrugged their shoulders and told me, yeah, that's totally normal. And knowing you know, with all my experience in outdoors, in the outdoors, I knew that what they did, I knew what they told me was wrong, but I literally could not gather the information to prove them wrong at that time. And so I spent another few months studying up what I could find on the internet. I went to my first Fish and Game meeting where I was actually an activist at that time. Prior to that, I just kind of went along with everybody else. And I gave my little spiel about wolves and what they were doing in my neck of the woods, and I told the commission that that my daughter couldn't even ride, my daughters could not even ride their bicycles down our driveway because the wolves were so prevalent in our area where I live. And at the end of that, the commissioner at that time, the head commissioner, Randy Budge, told me, or made a little speech after all of us spoke. There were several hundred people there at this meeting speaking against wolves. And the commission told us, go home, study like we do, get a better understanding of wolves, and then come back to us. And you'll understand that what we've done is the right thing. And it was right there. That's when the switch went off, and I said, enough of this. I know that these people are pulling wool over our eyes. I know that they're lying because I the experience I already had gave me the sense that you know, this is not normal and natural in the wild. So from that point on, I became a literal governmental wrecking ball, and I spent several thousand dollars, 20 to 30% of my income annually, and I traveled throughout all of the West, anywhere where wolves were infesting an area, and I filmed them. I filmed what they did. I filmed the impacts from what happened. I filmed ranchers. I filmed anything that I can film with relation to wolves. But then I got into interviewing former employees, former federal employees. And this is where it changed the game for all of us. It gave me some insight. It gave me information where I could start digging and finding the corruption within this program. And so after over nine and a half years or so, I have amassed a huge library, over 400 hours of wolves killing animals, livestock and wildlife. And with that, I have taken to the internet, produced two films. I'm in the process of writing a book, and the rest is, you know, the details of it. But it's been quite a ride.
Well, so that brings up a couple of things. I mean, we have some people that try to claim that wolves really aren't a problem. That you guys are overplaying this. This is not a big deal. And it's just a bunch of greedy farmers and ranchers that are concerned about this issue. How would you respond to something like that?
Well, I would respond that that's one of the talking points of that movement. I call them, among other things, you know, the Wolf Movement, or among other things. But anyway, they have a set of talking points they stuck to for the last 25, 30 years. And basically, anybody that opposes them or has an opposing view, including biologists, are referred to as people that believe in Little Red Riding Hood. And all the myths about wolves are wrong. That it was all concocted throughout history to demonize an animal so they can strip the land and bring cattle in and bring on this industrial revolution. That's what they claimed. And they claim it to this day. And it just repeats itself. It started out during the wolf introduction program here in Idaho the same exact way. The same playbook that they used for Washington, they already used in Idaho 20 years prior. All they have to do is demonize most of the people enough to where they won't go public. They will cower to anybody screaming at them, and they won't go to meetings. And that's all they needed, a foot through the door, because if anybody was doing their homework on wolves like I have, I'm just a common guy. I'm not some PhD that studied at Harvard. I'm just an average family man that enjoyed the outdoors. And I was able to gather thousands upon thousands of stories. These are news accounts, not hyperbole. This is news accounts, actual facts, documents, studies from all over the world where thousands upon thousands of people endured human killing, rabid wolves, livestock depredation. They didn't call it that then. It was when livestock were attacked back in the 17th, 18th century, it destroyed a community. And that's what those wolves did. And so anybody with half a brain, they can call themselves a biologist or even one of these politicians that is pushing this agenda. they have absolutely no idea what wolves are going to do, because the cycle of a wolf problem begins with this introduction. They will downplay the damage as long as they can. So, like, Stevens County is taking the brunt of this. And you can probably go to Seattle and never hear a thing about it because the media downplays it. They will never publish a true story about wolves. None of the Spokane media will at all until the saturation is so bad that it cannot be stopped. The idea that somebody can shoot, shovel, and shut up is only a tool by the enemy, by the pro-wolf side, to demonize us, saying that you've got to protect them, you've got to protect them, because all they're going to do is shoot them all. There's no way, it has never been done in history, that you can shoot your way out of this problem. So the saturation is key, and that's what our enemy is working for. They're working to saturate Washington. And the end game is to drive all those ranchers out of business, get them off of public land grazing allotments, and kill hunting. That is their goal. That's their mission.
Well, and I want to highlight this because I hear a lot more of it over in Olympia and on the west side of the state. You know, people are demonized, and if you stand up against them, I mean, man, you just paint a target on yourself and you get demonized. Now you have over, what, a million views of the things that you have filmed. You've got, what, two movies and a bunch of short films that you have documented this in such excruciating detail. But I really want to key in on something. Through all of that that you've documented, you've been attacked personally for doing this. And secondly, you really have destroyed the theory of natural balance these guys keep putting out there.
Oh, yeah. There's two theories out there. One is the theory of natural balance. The other one is the alpha theory. The alpha theory says that there's only one male and one female, the leaders of the pack, that breed and make puppies. So through film and my own research, I totally destroyed that. The creator of that theory is L. David Meach. About 3 or 4 years ago, he finally came out and admitted. He finally admitted, because I shamed him. You know, here's a common guy out there shaming this PhD that's been working on wolves for 57 years. And he came out and he admitted it. And then he came back a year later and had to chastise the media and all of academia for their continuance of pushing that agenda. So that was one side. The theory of natural balance says that wolves will, the predator chain will balance out nature, and everything comes to a natural balance. That is not true at all. Wolves will sterilize. They will sterilize an area until there's nothing left or nothing worth going after or hunting, and then they simply just move. The problems that Eastern Washington are facing now is a result of that theory, that the wolves damaged North Idaho so badly and reproduced so rapidly, they had nowhere else to hunt or go. They had to go to Washington.
Well, I'm a hunter and a hiker. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so that whole theory is out the window. And L. David Meach, the author of that theory, and know this, the theory of natural balance affects everything that we do and every environmental policy that is out there. It is basically the foundation of the entire environmental agenda, and it's destroyed. I proved it on film.
So I'm a hiker, a hunter, fisherman. Much as, you know, I get the chance to do it when I'm not over on the other side of the mountains, I'm back in Spokane. And what I've noticed is that if you stand up for just that lifestyle and viewpoint, you get attacked. If you fight for it affirmatively, you get attacked even more. So tell the listeners a little bit about how you've been personally attacked by standing up and saying, wait, this is bogus, and calling them on it.
Well, first it started out with the environmental organizations themselves employing their minions to verbally attack me online, tear apart my reputation, or try to damage my character. And then it moved up higher into the chain. Government was worse than Joe Q Public behind the computer screen. The government themselves, Idaho Fish and Game, Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks, the Yellowstone employees, all of those people worked very diligently to destroy my credibility, that I was just a nobody, and I had no knowledge of wolves, The reason I know this is because I filed Freedom of Information Act documents of emails with my name specifically included, and I discovered these. These employees of Fish and Game departments and government agencies were literally talking about how they were going to get me or attack me or discredit me. If I made a statement on the news or if I was on the news in southern Idaho, they had active Monday morning meetings discussing it within departments.
Well, I want to put in a little bit different terms. You had a government agency conspiring to smear your reputation. Literally.
Yes. Yes.
That is unbelievable to a lot of people. And I guess that brings me to the next part of this entire thing, especially in regards to, you know, natural balance being destroyed, this theory of natural balance being destroyed. There is this continued, I see it every about 3 months, somebody coming out and saying wolves don't spread disease. And that just simply is not true. That is conclusively disproven, that ridiculous statement. Tell listeners about that.
Oh, my gosh. I had the great opportunity and honor to film a man named Jim Beers, who is a former U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agent, special agent, who had retired. He was a whistleblower. And he came to Bozeman, Montana, this is, gosh, several years ago, and he explained to us how the wolves actually spread the disease. There's no information at that time. 7 years ago, you couldn't find a single document. It was buried. And come to find out, he unearthed this information for us, handed it to us at a meeting that my good friend Bob Fanning set up. And he talked to 300 people and explained to them how the diseases would spread. So from that point on, you know, so I pick up these crumbs and pieces that people were telling me, and I would do my own digging. And I did my own FOIA investigation, and I started learning that our own agencies knew it. So I filed a FOIA with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Idaho Fish and Game of any and all documents related to the wolves they brought into Idaho and Montana, whether or not they were inoculated or treated or vaccinated for any diseases, because that's the law. You cannot bring a cow across Canadian border unless it has proper veterinary paperwork and it's been treated. So what I uncovered was I had to go through Canada to get it, but I got the vet records from the wolf introduction itself. They never once, not a single one of the wolves they brought in here were treated for anything other than testing for rabies. That's it. There was no parasite testing. There was nothing. And that was a huge violation of the law. Huge. And
these are illegal. I mean, these are illegal wolves.
Yes. So that parasite itself cannot, Echinococcus granulosa, it's a hydatid tapeworm egg. It lives in the feces for several months as an egg. It's microscopic. Let's say that the wolves move through your area or through your property on your driveway, they desiccate. Those eggs are contained in that feces, and then it dries up a little bit, and your children ride their four-wheelers or car down the gravel road, and it run it over, it brings it, it lofts it in the air, and you breathe it in, and human beings can catch it. Hydatid disease is deadly. It's like cancer. And worldwide, hydatid disease kills millions of people.
Now, can it spread to other species of animals, just not just humans, but other species of animals?
Well, they're part of the cycle. The spread, yes. The disease itself, the cysts can go to the wildlife and livestock. The cysts have been found. So in my research with the illegal dumping of these wolves without testing, I found that Idaho Fish and Game in 2006 did their own study, and they found that 66% of the wolves had the disease. But what they didn't disclose is that they only showed a portion of that overall study. And what I found was 100%. In fact, I filmed the Idaho Fish and Game official that publicly told me on film that 100% of the wolves are infested now with Echinococcus granulosis. So they create a disease vector, and those wolves are moving everywhere. People spot them everywhere. And if you can close your eyes and picture yarn pinpoints all across the Northwest where these wolves are, they cross all of our properties. So all the wildlife, all the livestock, our children, our families, everybody is at risk. And the Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service caused it, and they refused to admit it or at least warn the public.
So in the last couple of minutes that we have left, how do we solve this problem? I mean, this is a big deal. And I know Idaho, you're now allowed to hunt wolves. But as you mentioned earlier, you can't shoot your way out of this problem. I mean, the Russians literally take up helicopter gunships to cull the wolf population, and they still have a huge problem in Siberia. So what's the solution?
Well, the solution is action, and action now. So wolves need to be completely and totally delisted. And then states that have these infected wolves, which I believe that all the western states have them now, they have to be killed. But in that process, any and all animals that also can spread the disease, like coyotes and fox, because they're going to be infected as well, they also must be killed. So it's almost unrealistic to think that we're going to be able to solve it now, because the damage is so vast. The only thing we can do is try to contain it. The solution would be... The people responsible, first of all, need to go to jail. That's what I'd like to see. There's people that are involved still to this day. In fact, Washington's head honcho at the Fish and Wildlife Service is Jim. His name slips in my mind. Your head Fish and Game official used to be ours, and he was a part of that as well. So he's ensuring that you guys get total saturation. So fire him first. That's the solution, and then we need to aggressively go after them. And the only way you can do it, and it's hard for people to digest, but we're going to have to poison them, because you're never going to kill them by shooting them.
And I'm sure there is probably a liberal or two listening to this radio show today that just went into orbit over that. But these are the realities on the ground. Either we poison our entire food supply for emergencies, i.e. our elk, deer, moose, bear populations through disease, or we poison the wolves and take care of what the vector is for the problem. I mean, that's really what we're saying here.
Tasmania and Australia, they had to kill everything and keep them dead for 10 years.
Wow. There you go. Well, if people want to get a hold of you or go watch your videos and films, where can they go to find out more about you and go watch those things?
On YouTube, you can look up Rockholm 66. All my videos are on there. You can also go to my Facebook page at Save Western Wildlife. It's fairly easy to find. Or you can look me up, Scott Rockholm. I have my own public page there as well.
All right, so Save Western Wildlife. Now, in the 2 minutes that we have left, there are... You know, we have a bigger fight over here in Washington State because we haven't even opened up wolves for hunting right now. But we have a lot of people that say, you know, the younger generation just would not even tolerate this. They wouldn't even go for it. So what would your message be to the younger generation on this issue?
That this is not about loves wolves or hates wolves. It's a matter of who controls them. And government is controlling them to harm other people. So... We can relate in a lot of ways with young people by just telling them, you know, walking them through this and telling them the damage it's going to do to the other wildlife, the safety issues for hikers and outdoors recreation. There's a number of things that we have in common with young people. I think that once they realize, and I just spoke to a group of young people this weekend, and they came around and finally realized that there is a possibility that, you know, they were wrong about their love of wolves. You know, they still like them, and I have no problem with them either, other than what they're doing to my communities. So I think if we just kind of join arms with them, instead of attacking them and telling them, these young people, that they're wrong, just say, look, please, you know, listen to what I'm saying, and possibly we can have a discussion about it. But I can, you know, I have so much video, I just need so much time to put it all together to show these young people.
Well, and on your Facebook page, one of the kind of creepiest pictures for me is that wolf kind of inside of a porch. people don't understand. This stuff is coming literally to our back door.
Yeah, they're it's It's the most, well, I'll tell you, I was attacked by wolves 5 years ago, and it's the most eerie thing that I've ever experienced in my life while filming, and I had to shoot my way out. And I pack a firearm wherever I go in the woods. So imagine the people that are walking down the trails unarmed, with no protection whatsoever. They are going to be in grave danger.
Or little kids waiting at a rural bus stop, for example. Well, anyway, Scott, thank you very much for joining me today on Patriot Radio. Really appreciate all the work you're doing, and I'd love to have you on again. You did a great job today, and you sure do sound like an expert, even if they might be poo-pooing you.
Thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate all you do as well.
All right. Take care and God bless. Scott Rockholm is an activist, wolf expert, and also his page, and I'm posting it up here on Patriot Radio right now. Save Western Wildlife. Okay, I'm putting it up there right now. Saving Western Wildlife. Take a look at it. And this one picture, the wolf on the front on the porch, is it's creepy. Unbelievable that we're even having this conversation, honestly. But take a look at that. And another reason, wolf management, of what makes us different than the west side of the state and why we want to control our own land use policy over here with the new state of liberty. I really thank everybody that has been joining the 51st State Movement page, save for a couple people that had to be blocked. A lot of great folks joining that and really showing that this is a popular movement of decentralization, and that it's time that we become a region, an area that promotes righteousness in Jesus Christ. And this is one way we can do it. And for some of those folks on the west side that might be a little bit apprehensive, we can draw some boundary lines, make some changes if we need to as well. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for everything that you are doing in defense of liberty. May God bless all of you.